This moment marked nothing less than what Jewish law calls Hakarat HaTov, an expression by Jews of Jewish gratitude. And this gratitude was shown to a statesman who had publicly embraced the Jewish link to the eternal city of the Jewish people. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 156. William Seward in Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In 1871, William Seward, Abraham Lincoln's former Secretary of State and trusted friend, sailed to the Holy Land. On the boat, several passengers caught his eye. His memoir of the trip, edited by his son, passages from which can be found on aish.com, and we have sent you a link to those passages, tells us the following, quote, "As we sat on the deck of our steamer coming from Alexandria to Jaffa, we remarked a family whom we supposed to be Germans. It consisted of a plainly dressed man with a wife who was ill and two children, one of them an infant in its cradle. The sufferings of the sick woman and her effort to maintain a cheerful hope interested us. The husband, seeing this, addressed us in English," end quote. And the memoir further tells us that the man said that, quote, he was an American Jew, that he had come from New Orleans and was going to Jerusalem, end quote. This memoir of Seward's trip explains, as we discussed in Bible 365, that this woman was engaged in pilgrimage for she was ill and was preparing to pass away, hoping to make it to the land of her ancestors in time to be interred, overlooking the Temple Mount on the Mount of Olives. The memoir of Seward's trip tells us further that, quote, "We parted with them on the steamer. The day after we reached the holy city, we learned that the poor woman had climbed the mountain with her husband and children and arrived the day after us. She died immediately and so achieved the design of her pilgrimage," end quote. As we mentioned in our discussion about the Mount of Olives, it is astounding and inspiring to ponder a Jewish woman from Louisiana who journeyed around the world to be buried in the Mount of Olives. This was Seward's introduction to the Jews of Jerusalem. And the visit, in a fascinating way, ended up reflecting both the particularistic and universalistic aspects of Jerusalem itself. During his final moments in the city, Seward spent the day watching the Jews of Jerusalem come to the Wailing Wall. In those days, of course, there was not the plaza that there is today. A tiny alleyway was all that was allowed by the authorities. I cite selections from the memoir's description of the scene. Quote, "Our last day at Jerusalem has been spent, as it ought to have been, among and with the Jews who were the builders and founders of the city, and who cling the closer to it for its disasters and desolations. For centuries, we do not know how many, the Turkish rulers have allowed the oppressed and exiled Jews the privilege of gathering at the foot of this wall one day in every week and pouring out their lamentations over the fall of their beloved city and praying for its restoration to the Lord." The memoir adds, "The small rectangular oblong area without roof or canopy serves for the gathering of the whole remnant of the Jewish nation in Jerusalem. Here, whether it rains or shines, they come together at an early hour, old and young, men, women, and little children, the poor and the rich in their best costumes, discordant as the diverse nations from which they come. They are attended by their rabbis, each bringing the carefully preserved and elaborately bound texts of the Book of the Lamentations of Jeremiah." The memoir further tells us, "For many hours they pour forth their complaints, reading and reciting the poetic language of the prophet, beating their hands against the wall, and bathing the stones with their kisses and tears." And we're further informed that during the several hours while we were spectators of it, there was not one act of irreverence or indifference, end quote. Now, why is this reflection so remarkable? We do not need Seward or his son to inform us that Jerusalem is sacred to Jews. What is fascinating about this story is what it tells us about Seward. Seward and his touring party gaze with respectful reverence upon the mourning Jews, disregarding what must have been the Middle Eastern sun. The glory that was the Jerusalem of the temple had not existed for some time yet. For the observers, it seems that the memory of the temple lived still. As an introduction to this section of the memoir, the reader is given a verse from Ezekiel, "And the name of the city shall be from that day forward, the Lord is there." In other words, from the perspective of this memoir, so long as Jews still venerate the site where the temple was, so long as they believe that God still dwells there, then God does still dwell there. Jerusalem, Jewish Jerusalem, was for these non-Jewish observers a source of inspiration and of faith. We have thus two stories from Seward's sojourn. One, the arduous journey and the heartbreaking burial of the Jewish mother on the Mount of Olives, speaks to how Jerusalem was and is a source of longing and love and unity for the Jewish people, even when exiled and dispersed around the world. But the other story describing the reverence shown by non-Jews for the Jewish connection to Jerusalem teaches us something as well, that the mysterious metaphysical link between Jews and Jerusalem can inspire and fuel faith beyond the Jewish people itself. This means that in Jerusalem we discover a profound particularism but also a glorious universalism, and indeed that the two go hand in hand. For as we have also learned in Bible 365, Solomon, the Book of Kings tells us, gathered all Israel and Jerusalem to inaugurate the temple, and there delivered one of the great speeches in the Bible, explaining the theology of Jerusalem for all eternity. The Ark of the Covenant, the throne of God, was brought at Solomon's instruction into the temple, and the presence of the Almighty somehow suffuses the structure. And this represented a mystery that Solomon, as wise as he was, could not solve. How can an infinite Almighty take up permanent residence in Jerusalem? And so he began his speech by remarking at this mystery, saying, "Will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heaven and heaven of heavens cannot contain thee." This, in other words, is a miracle that even Solomon cannot explain. And when we think about it, we realize that the mystery of the Temple Mount embodies the miracle that is the Jewish people. A universal God who created the universe chooses to make his presence known, first and foremost, in one relatively small site on a relatively small mountain in the Middle East. And this, in turn, embodies another surprise that the God of all humanity chooses to be known to humanity through one particular family, through one particular people, that the creator of all the earth seeks to be known on earth as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The presence of an infinite God in Jerusalem is linked, therefore, to the miraculous chosenness of the Jewish people. And these miracles can be recognized by and can inspire those far beyond the Jewish people itself. And that is what Solomon stresses, telling Israel that the temple will be a house of Jewish unity as his father David dreamed. But in his speech, Solomon also offered a prayer to God where he added, "Moreover, concerning a stranger that is not of thy people Israel, but cometh out of a far country for thy name's sake, for they shall hear of thy great name and of thy strong hand and of thy stretched out arm. When he shall come and pray toward this house, hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place and do according to all that the stranger calleth to thee for, that all people of the earth may know thy name to fear thee, as do thy people Israel, and that they may know that this house which I have builded is called by thy name." Solomon, in other words, looks forward to a time when all will be inspired by the miracle of God's chosen people. And this inspiration will lead the nations to come to serve God in Jerusalem. The Memoir of Seward's trip tells us that at sunset, his party encountered a rabbi who invited the group to attend Kabbalat Shabbat, Sabbath evening prayers, at the Churva Synagogue, recently built, the most magnificent Jewish house of worship in the Holy Land. Seward sat through the entire service, which concluded with a special Hebrew benediction. We are informed by the memoir, quote, "The congregation now gathered in, the women filling the gallery and the men in varied costumes and wearing hats of all shapes and colors, sitting or standing as they pleased. The lighting of many silver lamps judiciously arranged gave notice that the sixth day's sun had set and that the holy day had begun. Instantly the worshippers all standing and as many as could turning to the wall began the utterance of prayer, bending backward and forward, repeating the words in a chanting tone, which each read from a book in a low voice like the reciting of prayers after the clergyman in the Episcopal service. It seemed to us a service without prescribed form or order. When it had continued for some time, thinking that Mr. Seward might be impatient to leave, the chief men requested that he would remain a few moments until a prayer should be offered for the President of the United States and another for himself. Now a remarkable rabbi, clad in a long, rich, flowing sacerdotal dress, walked up the aisle. A table was lifted from the floor to the platform and, by a steep ladder which was held by two assistant priests, the rabbi ascended the platform." End quote. So we are informed, and the memoir further describes the prayer said and adds, quote, "At the close of the reading, the rabbi came to Mr. Seward and informed him that it was a prayer for the President of the United States and a thanksgiving for the deliverance of the Union from its rebellious assailants. Then came a second, it was in Hebrew, and intoned, but the rabbi informed us that it was a prayer of gratitude for Mr. Seward's visit to the Jews at Jerusalem, for his health, for his safe return to his native land, and a long, happy life. The rabbi now descended, and it was evident that the service was at an end," end quote. As I reflected in commentary, this moment marked nothing less than what Jewish law calls hakarat hatov, an expression by Jews of Jewish gratitude. And this gratitude was shown to a statesman who had publicly embraced the Jewish link to the eternal city of the Jewish people. And this story is a sign that further such recognitions are possible and remind us that when they occur, hakarat hatov, gratitude from Jews, is required in return. The incredible story of Seward's visit inspires us to ponder all that Jerusalem is for Jews and the inspiration that Jerusalem as a Jewish city can be to the world. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.